Morning, everyone. This is the public session of the Internationalized Registration Data Working Group interim report. We'll go ahead and start up the audio for folks who are connecting remotely, and we'll go ahead and start the recording for the audio on the Adobe Connect room. And we do have the slides loaded in the Adobe Connect room, and you also can get them from the link on the page on the schedule for this session. So welcome, everyone. We have a presentation today for you and also a discussion on the Internationalized Registration Data Working Group's interim report. This will be provided by Edmund Chung, who is the working group co-chair. So perhaps without further ado, I'll go ahead and turn it over to Edmund.
Thank you, Julie. And welcome, everyone. And just to get started, this is the Internationalized Registration Data Working Group. It's a joint working group from the ESSAC and the GNSO. Just a quick summary, we actually did put out a report for public comments, and the public comments are closing in mid-March, but I'll get back to that, a little bit more about that. So I'll quickly talk about some of the objectives of the group so that everyone get a sense of where we were starting. And then a summary of the discussions we had, and then a set of preliminary recommendations and a few questions for the community. There are a few models that we came up with to address certain issues, and we'd like to get feedback from the community here and also through the public comments. Next. So the group started out realizing that there are IDN guidelines, the ICANN IDN guidelines exist for domain labels and to a certain extent policies as well. However, in terms of the standards for submission of registration data and also display of registration data, what we generally call Whois, as a directory service, that part is missing, and this is what this group is chartered to work on, and the focus of the discussion. So to really summarize in fairly simple terms, the scope of the working group is to understand how we want to internationalize domain registration data, and also to specify how to internationalize the Whois services and Whois protocol directory services, and what we mean by that is what kind of data elements need to be internationalized, whether there needs to be addition, edits, change in terms of policy, in terms of protocol. I should take that back a little bit. Before we talk about changing protocol, is like what we need the protocol to do, and then take a look at, you know, whether there needs to be any change. There might be any need for change in the protocol. So, next. So, summarizing from the discussion we started, I think about a year ago in terms of discussion, and the main questions are whether the Whois protocol is able to support international registration data currently as it exists, whether the protocol itself whether it is able to, and you know, how it would be able to support internationalized registration data. And then the second one is as I mentioned, sort of how you would query the registration data and the display of the registration data for internationalized domain names, as well as internationalized registration data. That's like contact information, contact name, those kind of things. And on top of that, variants. I think most people heard about IDN variants. There is some implications to the registration data and who is as well. So how that will be handled. And as I mentioned, so what the capabilities are needed in terms of the directory services. And also, one of the core questions that we're asking is that in the IDN environment, in the environment where IDNs are accepted and domain names are used by people around the world who may not primarily be English may not be the primary language, how do we accommodate them to submit and receive and display registration data in their local language, in their internationalized formats? So essentially, that sort of is the background of the discussion, and what we've come up with so far as the for which was the report that went out for public comments is we came up with a set of models for the registration data, especially on contact information and contact name. And then we have also a set of preliminary recommendations for the community consideration. So it's summarizing the set of first, I guess, the set of what we feel were easier set of things to deal with. In summarizing that, the group discussed about a number of things, and how those elements, those data elements, should be internationalized. First one is domain names. The group feel that both as an IDN, both the A label and the U label, in case people just this becomes too technical, it really means the local characters, the local version, the native character version of the domain name, as well as the DNS used, which is an ASCII label, the A label, both of which should be able to be used for querying the Whois, as well as for the Whois to eventually display. And when I talk about Whois here, it's a mixture of Whois as a protocol, Whois as a service, and basically a directory service, so that you can submit to it either the U label or the A label, and receive both the A label and the U label. That's similar to the name servers, because besides the domain name itself, in a regular Whois result, you would see name server names as well. And if those are IDNs, we would the recommendation is to have the A label and also optionally the U label displayed as well. And in terms of the sponsoring registrar, that's one area that we feel that could remain in U.S. ASCII. That's one of the one of the things is that the main language at the ICANN is still generally English, but this allows different people and law enforcement, I guess, and other entities to be able to contact a sponsoring registrar as it is today. In terms of phone numbers or fax numbers, we recommend that we follow the UPC standards. That should be relatively straightforward. In terms of email addresses, that also could be an IDN including a internationalized email address as well. So for that, it seems relatively straightforward. We point towards the standards for email internationalization, the email address internationalization RFC, and use that standard for internationalized email addresses. In terms of registration status, that's like whether something is locked or in hold, on hold or active. That we refer to the EPP standard and the EPP code. That's the recommendation from the working group. In terms of the dates, that's one of the areas that the working group is still going has yet to discuss. We don't think it's a big issue, but the dates are important in terms of identifying the expiry, the creation, and when it was updated. So this moves to where we really need some help. We are looking at four models. We've discussed four models for data elements for contact information and contact name. Essentially, that's the contact address and contact name. So we have come up, the working group have discussed and come up with four models that we want some feedback from the community. And just to add to that, not necessarily just these four models. So if people feel that there is another model 5 or model 6, then we also want to get a sense of. But in the group, we feel that this provides a pretty good coverage for especially for discussion. So getting right into it, model 1. Is sort of what I personally would call almost like a status quo, because we would say that registrants would have to provide a must-be-present script. And by saying must-be-present, we really mean the existing ASCII representation. So in Model 1, what we're saying that, okay, optionally you can have internationalized data, but registrants must also provide a must-be-present script. So they must send in a contact name and in contact address in an ASCII form. In Model 2, sort of right the other way, Model 2 is where registrants will only provide data in their native language, in a script that's obviously have to be accepted by the registrar. So they would and the WHOIS would only offer the contact information in the local language and local script. And what happens is that you would only see the local language, but there would be an additional point of contact from the registrar. And so Model 2 is only exists in local language, but would require a point of contact from registrars. And that point of contact is would be tasked to provide transliteration or translation such that contact can be established with the registrant. And for Model 3, it's a little bit different again, but for the registrant, again, the registrant will provide data only in their local language, and then the registrar will be tasked to actually not only a point of contact, but would be tasked to provide a transliteration tools to publish the WHOIS in a must-be-present script, and basically the registrar will submit the information in their local language, but the registrar will be required to transliterate that information and provide it in ASCII. For Model 4 is similar to Model 3, except instead of transliteration, the approach is to have a translation. So again, the registrant will be providing information in their local language, whereas the registrar will then be tasked to translate that information and then publish them in the must-be-present script and language. So I'll provide a little bit more example on the four models. In Model 1, you see that here you see that a Russian example and a Chinese example. What it really says is that all the information is almost as is, and it's provided by the registrant in ASCII. So this is almost like a what we're doing today. So and for model 2, as I mentioned, that's sort of the opposite, where the only in the Whoist, it's only the information in the local script. So for the Russian example and the Chinese example, you can see that the address and the contact, they're only provided in their local script. But there is the registrar point of contact at the top, that's the registrar POC, where that's where, you know, if you don't understand the local language, then you could connect with that registrar point of contact and obtain information through that mode. That's the concept of Model 2. For Model 3, which is a transliteration of the information, so again, the registrant would have provided the registrar only information in their local language and local script. However, here you see that in terms of the Whois display, you see the Russian example and Chinese example that the address and the name, they're transliterated versions of the Chinese or Russian Cyrillic. And I'll move quickly to Model 4 to sort of distinguish between the two. So now you see Model 4, look at the last line with the address, which is you see Russian PR China, and you move back to Model 3, it says Zhongguo in the Chinese example, and I think it also says Russia, because I don't know Russian, but it seems like. But so the difference there is that in Model 3, we're asking for information to be transliterated, and so the information may or may not be English. May or may not be able to be immediately used by an English user, but for Model 4, it is translated, so you see China and Russia, that those translated into translated into a form that you can understand. So that's the difference between Model 3 and Model 4. So, moving on. And another issue that we spent some time discussing is the issue of variance. And not in terms of trying to decide, you know, define what variants are or what policies needs to be in place, but for the IRD, what is because that's sort of out of scope for IRD. What is in scope, we feel that, you know, is to take a look at the categories in terms of whether they are in the DNS or not in the DNS, so whether it's in the zone or not in the zone. And we sort of categorize them as being activated, which is IDN variants that are in the DNS together with the primary IDN, and reserved, which is not included in the DNS zone along with the primary IDN. So the general approach is that in terms of the activated, the general recommendation is to, for activated variants, for IDN variants that are in the zone, when you do Whois, then that should return the information of the primary domain as well, and so that people understand that this is a variant of the primary domain. For query of reserved variants, it's essentially not in the DNS zone, then we feel that that's probably a matter of local policy. The reason why, and local policy not only just local, but for the registry, here's what I mean. And the reason why is if you look at existing examples, you look at the Whois, which matches somewhat with the what is in the zone in the DNS, and for reserved names, that is handled a little bit differently. Reserved names, because they're not in the zone, for example, there are reserved names for different TLDs like .asia, and in the Whois it is provided. You can see, if you query a reserve name, you'll see that it's a reserve name. But in, for example, in the IANA who is there. I like TLD. There are also reserved strings as well, but they would not return an entry for reserved names in certain whoises. So that's why we feel that, you know, for activated, for those in the zone, it should return the information along with the primary IDN. Whereas if it's reserved, then, you know, it's really up to the registry to decide how to deal with that. So just going back to mentioned earlier on, actually, just to explain a little bit more, in terms of the U-label and A-label, the basic recommendation is that the WHOIS protocol clients should be able to accept a user querying a domain name in either the U-label or A-label. So an end user should be able to use a native form or the ACE label to query the WHOIS, and in return, the WHOIS protocol clients must be able to display the results, and the results will include both the U label and A label for domain names. And then what we mean by that is that when the result comes back, both the U label and A label should be shown, essentially. And here's an example of what we mean. So up there, you see that there's a click one more just to highlight. Yes, that's the IDN. So that's what's being queried. So you can either query it in the native form or in the A label. That's what we call the U label and the A label, respectively. And then in the response, you would get both the domain in its native form and the domain in its ASCII A label form will be displayed. And on top of which, variants. Here is showing that if there is a variant, if there is an active variant, then it would also be shown, and the variant will also be shown in both the native form, which is the U label, as well as the A label. So just to summarize the preliminary recommendations from the working group is that in terms of it as a directory service, we feel that the WHOIS protocol clients, that's what we mean both in terms of port 43 and web, again, they must be able to accept user querying domain names in either U-label or A-label. And in terms of displaying results, they should display both the U label and A label for domain names. And in terms of variants, domain registration data should include variants of IDN label. Addition to that, in terms of the data elements, again, this is sort of like a repeat, but not exactly. It's in terms of the data elements for WHOIS directory services, it should include both the A label and U label for IDN domain names. For name server names, they should also include and return both the A label and U label. And for sponsoring registrar information, as I mentioned earlier on, that should be in US ASCII. And for the registration status, that should go with the EPP standard status code, and including actually the email address and the phone telephone numbers that I mentioned before. So here, basically, as a short conclusion, is that the report has gone out for public comments. We want some feedback from the four models that I mentioned, you know, how to deal with and what to at a policy level, what to request registrants and registrars to do for contact information, contact name and contact address. And also we had a set of preliminary recommendations on some of the data elements. and just would like to have feedback from whether that seems to be the right direction for variants, for requiring both the U-label and the A-label, and you know, different handling of those items. So, and whether there are any additional things that we should consider, we've missed, or we should rethink. Thank you. Let's see if you have any questions.
Thank you very much, Edmund. So we now would like to open up the floor to questions and discussion. So we welcome your feedback, thoughts, and comments. Yes, sir, and please do state your name and your affiliation.
My name is Hiro Hota from .jp CCTA Registry. As to variants, this may be a stupid question, but variants are considered to be, for example, two presentations of one domain name or two different domain names that are treated as a kind of unity. This may lead to different results regarding, for example, one who is entity or multiple who is entities. Have you thought about that?
Yes, thank you, Hiro, for the question. I think when the work group deliberated on the issue, we were focusing on it as a in the registration part and registration administration. If they're considered one registration or multiple registration. If it's considered one registration, whether you can add more domains to it or not, it's one bundle. Then it's, you know, we consider them, this is what we call as variants. And then we look at whether the variants are in the zone or not in the zone. Because for the whois, our sort of, the approach we took was whether, first of all, whether the name, the record, is in the zone. And from there, we group it together and say, you know, this, administratively or policy-wise, the registry considered this bundle as one group. And that's, in our discussion, that's what we call IDN variants. I don't know if Jim or others want to add to it. Jim.
This is Jim Galvin from Filius. Add a response just one layer down, so agreeing with everything that that Edmund said, but I think it's also important to keep in mind that variant is really a language issue. So Edmund was responding to the part of your question about how one, given the existence of a variant, sort of what are you doing on top of that once they exist. I also think that it's the reason why variants are out of scope in a more technical response as opposed to a policy response is that it really is a language issue. So it's up to the language table and those definitions to decide what those characters are supposed to mean. And it is a fact that you have the case where you have a couple of different representations of the same thing. And so there's policy issues about what you do with that. But some of that can be addressed by just defining in a language table one way or another. So I think it's just important to make that separation between the language issue and the policy issue.
And the work here is really, just to clarify a little bit more, is that the two different types you mentioned, Hiro, it's not part of the scope of the working group, because if it's considered two different registrations, then they won't be considered variants in this work.
More questions? Is there anything in the chat room?
This is Bob Hutchinson. I have a question. This presentation was given to other groups this week. Was it given to the registry working group or not?
Thanks, Bob. The only group that this presentation was given to was to the GNSO Council at its working session on Saturday.
As implementers, the body that's most affected by this work would be the registry, so I would hope that we would make a presentation to their interest group or their community, so that especially for the model question, they're the ones who are going to be most affected, I believe, by whatever this group, and I would prefer to see most feedback come from them.
Thank you. And we did do it at the GNSO where both registries and registrars are. And personally, I also gave an update at the registry constituency, registry stakeholder group meeting. Not so much in detail, but you know the where the process is. Speaking of which, actually, I think what did come up from the GNSO presentation was very, very useful, I think. And we can, if there are not much questions, we can start the discussion here as well, if that's okay. So a couple of things. First, on the question, I think both the registry and the registrars are probably should be interested in it, because some of the models, actually it was Tim from GoDaddy that immediately raised the question, so is all these translation thing going to be done by the registrar, and does it matter whether it's a thin registry or a thick registry? So immediately, I think this is an issue not only in terms of implementation by registries, but also for registrars. So you know, I take that comment, and I think you know that definitely that's something we should look into as we move along to engage the registries as well as the registrars. And then we also received an interesting comment which we were discussing on the list. I don't know, you know, since there aren't any much question, I thought it might be interesting to, you know, raise that, and we have some time, so we can raise that as a question. Is that okay? So, but Steve wants.
There's a comment in the Adobe Connect room from Dave Pistello. He said, I can staff or a member of the IRD working group can provide a webinar for the registries if this is desirable.
Yeah, that should be a good idea. Registries and registrars, I don't know how the registrars meet, actually. I don't remember. Because it does impact the registrars as well. So jumping back to some of the comments that we received, one particular which gathered some traffic was the question about language tag. In terms of the IDN itself, I think there was a brief discussion about the IDN tag, like the IDN language tag for the domain name. I'm sorry, I don't remember exactly whether the current document includes that. If not, then that's probably at least one of the things that we might need to add.
Yeah, the current document doesn't contain a discussion on the language tag.
So that's something that, you know, after the comments, we should probably look into adding and how we should.
Yeah. Well, Edmund, I think quite a few members of the working group is here. Maybe we can just open up the mic and see what do they think of the issue. Maybe at the first step, we can ask the people to introduce, mm-hmm. around the table, to introduce themselves. I know we've been meeting over the time, but you know, this is kind of a face-to-face meeting, so that'll be good.
Thank you for reminding. It's my bad, actually. Why don't we go around? Because we did garner a few more people as we were discussing, so perhaps just, Hata, you can just introduce around the table, so just who you are and your affiliation.
Hiro Hata from .jpcctld registry, non-working group member.
Jim Galvin from Phileas, and I'm here as a representative from ESSEC.
Steve Sheng, Ekenstaff.
Francisco Arias, that kind of stuff.
I'm Bob Hutchinson. I'm from Dynamic Ventures, and I am on the working group.
Good morning, everybody. Laurent Ferly from the French Ministry of Economy.
Hi, Ralal Deschamps. ICANN board member, invited here as a technical expert.
Steve Metallitz. I'm a working group member, and I am active in the intellectual property constituency.
Julie Hedlund, ICANN staff.
Andrei Kolesnikov, Russian Federation, and also GNSO, and member of this working group.
And myself, Edmund Chung from .Asia. We welcome anyone to join the discussion. So just to, because we're going around the room, just quickly introduce yourself.
James Singh, terms of observing at this moment.
Jay Daly from .NZ.
Akino Maimura from JPNIC. ISBCP here, and they're observing the session.
Okay, so I guess we jump back into the discussion about the IDN language tag, the tag for, the language tag for the IDN itself. Any thoughts, discussion besides? I remember raising it at one point, but in any case, this is a question from Harold.
Why do you need... I see why people might think they need the language tag. What do you want to tag, and what do you want to what functions do you want to alter behavior as a result of that tag?
That's a very legitimate question. Right now, though, if I remember correctly, the ICANN IDN guidelines do ask that registrations of IDN include a IDN language tag. That, I think, is one of the requirements.
As far as I remember, the purpose of that specific language tag on domain name registration is to select the variant table to use when generating variants for that. So that's a particular requirement. What I'm worried about is that, for instance, if you start language tagging street addresses, you might take on the responsibility for displaying those street addresses in contexts and to people who don't understand that language, which might be somewhat complex to get a consistent user experience from, speaking as someone who's working for the same company that runs Google Maps.
Edmund, may I? Okay, so I think Edmund raised this. There are two things going on here. One was on our working group mailing. I'm sorry, this is Jim Galvin. I didn't actually say I was a member of this working group, but when I said I was an ESSEC member, I'm the ESSEC, one of the ESSEC representatives to this working group. So earlier in the week, some notes were put forth about what happened at the GNSO working session when the presentation was given there. And the comment was made that, taken from the floor of that discussion, was a question of had we considered using the language tag before or not. And so I started the thread on our working group mailing list about what was that question. And I actually was asking the same question that you are, Harold, which is what was the purpose of asking for this language tag? And because in the spirit, as I understood the question over the dialogue that we had, what was expressed is we should put include a language tag in the WHOIS protocol output. That's what I understood the question to mean. And I'll just So I'll put that out there to continue the discussion, then I'll give my response here sort of in advance to that. And my response to that question was, well, I think that that's the reason why this working group exists. I mean, the fundamental issue here for me from a technical point of view is that the WHOIS output is free form. And so if you put the language tag there, it's not at all clear to me that that's helpful in any sensible way. So that's one issue for just from a presentation point of view. So taking it up a layer, to me, the non-existence of the language tag is fundamentally why this working group exists, because we're here to figure out what we can do about the fact that the WHOIS protocol and WHOIS data model does not, in fact, support the IDN needs going forward of the domain name system and the registry system that supports it. So that's my comment.
Thank you, Jim. And I just want to separate the two, and I think, Harold, you made a very good point. And I wanted to focus on the IDN, the domain name, the language tag for that first, and then we can talk about, and then move on to talk about the contact name and contact address. So if you can bear with us. So focusing back on the IDN itself, the domain name, I think the question really for the group is whether we require an IDN language tag as a data element to be submitted, first of all, and whether it is a data element to be displayed. So that's really what's sort of in front of the group, I think.
So there are two points of submission, and I guess we should clarify them, right? Because we also had a little bit of discussion on our working group mailing list as a carry-on to this about part of the submission is in the registration data. So when you're getting the registration and it's going out, you know, is there a language tag associated with that? And then there's the question of a language tag included as part of the WHOIS query. I'm asking for this WHOIS thing, do I put a language tag there? And then, of course, I would naturally get a language tag back. So which language tag submission are we talking about?
There's a comment from remote participation. Pizzatello raised that it's not simply that the language tag does not exist. Data are not tagged in general, and the character set is not signaled.
I think that's a very legitimate comment, and the group needs to take that into account. I just want to jump back to Jim's question, and I think it seems to me, you know, we should definitely ask both questions. I'm not sure whether a data element to assist the IDN registration as a whole is at all in scope here, and if it is already at the in the ICANN IDN guidelines, does that give us put it within the scope and say that okay, this is a data element that needs to be in the WHOIS. I guess that's the first question. And then in terms of submission, it seems to me that the question probably needs to frame that whether it's the submission of a name needs to include the IDN tag, IDN language tag, and whether the IDN language tag as a data element has anything that could be that information could come back from. Does that make sense?
I still don't get which submission you're talking about. Submission of the WHOIS query or submission of the registration data?
So we're dealing with three things. One, submission of the registration itself, submission of the WHOIS query for a domain name, and submission of the tag itself for WHOIS, whether that's anything that, you know, we can throw that the third one right away, maybe, but I think those are the three questions, right?
So I still don't get it. I'm sorry, I'm even being dense today. But you can supply when you register a domain name, you can supply a language tag for which language you want the domain name to be interpreted as when looking at variant tables. That is obviously necessary. It might also be out of scope for this group if this group is concentrating on who is. You might also want to say that that the registrant has to supply a language tag that indicates which language the rest of his information is in. Otherwise, the registry or the recipient of the registration has no way of telling, which, well, depends on whether he can do something about it. Then you have the third place for language tag, which is in who is query for a domain. I don't think it has anything to do there because there's no possible difference in the answer. And the fourth language tag, which is in the who is query for a domain, indicating which language the user wants to receive back. That is like the accept language in the HTTP protocol, which... I mean, the who is broken, which is, I'll repeat, as a broken record. Who is useless for this purpose, the who is protocol. So I'll repeat that every 20 seconds this for a few hours, I think. But you also have the language tag that comes back with the data. And there you actually have two language tags again. The language tag that attaches to the domain name, telling what the registrant intended, and the language tag that attaches to the other data.
Please go ahead.
Yeah, could somebody clarify, in current use of the language tag, is that language tag describing the second level domain, and in the new internationalized domain names, will the language tag describe both the TLD and the second level? Because there are registries that support multiple languages in the second level of the TLD. Could somebody explain how that's currently done?
And just a point of order to remind everybody, please do introduce yourself each time
Bob
you speak.
Hutchinson.
Because the folks in the Adobe Connect listening to the sound won't know who you are. Thanks.
Yeah, this is Edmund, and I think on Harold, as I mentioned, we understand that there's the IDN language tag, which is for the IDN, the domain itself, and then there is a potential for a language tag for the contact information, contact name and contact address, and we're trying to separate the discussion. So focusing on the IDN, the domain name first, and along the question in terms of which does it pertain, I think it seems to me that it would be the domain label which is registered. The registration, it would pertain the string for which the the level of which registration happens. So if it's a TLD and then a second level registration, then the IDN tag seems to pertain the second level. But that is a very good question, because now we're going to a world with IDN TLDs. And in the case where there would be one language in the TLD and another IDN language in the second level, how do we deal with that is a very interesting question.
And I mean, I can say that the language tag refers to the second level domain, and I agree with everything that Harold said down there on the end. And so, my comment then, I guess, in summary of all of this, and I think it's been more than 20 seconds, Harold. So I'll take the opportunity to repeat your comment, because in summary, even to the discussion that we had when we started this little discussion on the mailing list after the notes that came from the GNSO session, is I said that fundamentally, you know, we've gotten to a place where I think we know that the WHOIS protocol needs to be replaced. You know, I mean, it's just not sufficient for purposes going forward. And so we're trying to draft the requirements that we need, you know, so that really is, let me say this differently. The requirements that are coming out for what is needed to support a directory service in an IDN world, it's clear that the conclusion is that Whois protocol needs to be replaced. And so the question that has to be answered is doing that. And I think that asking about a language tag and whether or not we can use it actually gets right at that issue. I mean, if you're going to solve the problem, the way to solve the problem that we have is you need to include a language tag, and you're either going to figure out a way to get that into the Whois protocol and data model. It's only there now for the second-level domain, and so there's a lot to be done there to fix it into the rest of it, or you're going to acknowledge that the best thing to do is to replace Whois protocol with something that has this incorporated as an integral part of it rather than trying to retrofit it. So I agree with Harold. The right thing to do is to say Whois is broken, the Whois protocol is broken, and you know I don't think there's much to talk about with this language tag. I don't.
Thank you, Jim. I think that's quite clear. I would like to suggest, I was wondering if we can have a discussion on the four models and how do we move forward. You know, what do we do? So we have these four models. You know, what's the process for reaching a conclusion or reaching something? So,
Steve, this is Julie Hedlund. I just should note that part of the process, I would think, is getting the comments from the on the four models from the public comment forum. So I haven't looked recently, but I haven't seen any comments lodged there yet, but we have extended the period and also published all of the six UN languages. So hopefully that will start to stimulate some comments. And then I think that the suggestion that was made earlier to do perhaps webinars for the registrars and registries perhaps will encourage some comments on those four models too. And that's just a suggestion for one way to move ahead, and that's a legitimate question. I'm interested to hear what the working group members have to say.
Julie, I completely agree with you, just to say.
Yeah, so let me, this is Jim Galvin. I just want to defer explicitly to the chair here about, you know, I mean, I really don't think that there's much discussion to have about language tag, although I'm happy to talk about it more if people want to do that. But I like Steve's suggestion about focusing on the four models and having a little discussion there. There is a process, obviously. We are going to ultimately have to have incorporating those comments from the public comment period. But I think that's a critical issue for this working group, is coming to closure on those four models and reconciling them down to one. Because otherwise, I mean, if we can't put forth one model as a result, I don't think that this working group has succeeded. I would say we have failed. So we need to think about the process for doing that. That would be an important discussion topic.
Thank you, Jim. I agree very much. I did want to close the question about IDN language tags. So the question really is pretty simple. Do we include it or do we not include it in the Whois display?
Okay, I'll say no. you know, just Jim Galvin speaking again. You know, from a technical point of view, the Whois output is freeform, and just adding the language tag there is just, you know, not it's not an implementation. It's not the right way to do it from an implementation point of view. I mean, I guess. Perhaps there are folks who could make use of it, you know, but it's not the right solution. In addition to the fact that, going back to Dave Piscatella's comment in the group, in the room, it doesn't really satisfy what you need, because the language tag only exists for the domain name at the moment. The language tag does not exist for all of the individual data elements, and so it's an insufficient solution.
Wait a minute. I guess the question is, you know, right now we require, when people register a domain, register an IDN, they have to submit an IDN language tag. And I would really feel that it is a required, it's a data point. I don't care whether the Whois data is in what language, but the registration is pertaining that IDN language tag. And that's a registration, you know, it's part of the registration, like, you know, the date or the telephone number or the name. It has nothing to do with what the contact information, what the language, the contact information, or any other parts of the who is, but it pertains a what was submitted in the registration. So it seems to me that it should be displayed in the who is for.
So okay. Yes. Oh, I was going to.
Okay, Jim first, and then.
Okay. Yes, I agree with you. Let me be more precise about my objection. I actually don't have a problem with the language tag being displayed, as long as it's displayed as part of the domain name, since that's what it is submitted as. What I don't want and what I object to is suggesting that display solves our problem in any way. So we should obviously expand our report to include a discussion of this so that we can be clear about the language tag and what it does and doesn't do and what is available and what's not.
Okay. Good. I totally agree with that.
So, Jay Daly, if I gather then, Jim, your objections to having it in the whois are withdrawn then, provided that the scope is that it is clearly identified as only applying to the domain name, then that's there. Because my view is that whilst we don't know how people would use it, if it's not there, they can't use it. And so we ought to have it there and then let people work it out how to use it themselves.
It seems we have agreement on the table on this.
That's great. We have agreement. Now to where we don't have agreement. Oh.
Yeah, could we have Jim elaborate further on why he doesn't believe this is, why language tagging is not an adequate solution for the future? Are you implying that we need to move to a user-based language query that essentially is like the web operates today, where your browser is in a particular language mode and the system responds to you in the language that is that the implication of what you're saying?
No. In fact, a language tag is obviously what's required for the future. And so what I'm saying in the language tag is I think that consideration of adding a language tag to the whois protocol that we have today is not the right answer for the future. But as it is a necessity going forward that elements have a language tag associated with them. And whether that's an individual language tag per data element or a language tag for each of the contact elements and one for the host object and, you know, contact objects or something like that. I mean, but yeah, language tag is a requirement, and then the question is how do you get there? And what I'm saying is not in the whois protocol.
Rob, that seems pretty. Oh, Steve, please. No, I think that seems pretty clear. So it's again, we go back to the protocol versus the data elements. The data elements require language tagging. The protocol, if we use the Yahoo's protocol, we don't really need to discuss there. That the language tagging doesn't make sense. That I think, is that pretty. Does that clarify the? You still seem a bit confused.
Yeah, I am. So the protocol, as defined by the IETF RFC for port 43 implementation, for example, I don't understand why. Yes, it's free form, but why you wouldn't just say we are talking about language tagging a bunch of elements. Why you're saying the protocol is broken? Because the protocol isn't broken. The protocol can be used to express language tags as well as any other data we want. I'm not following your comment that the protocol is broken.
I can try to, unless you want to.
Okay, well, I guess I'm pressing on this point, so maybe I'll just keep going with it for right now. Just trying to collect my thoughts here to express clearly what I'm trying to say. The issue is that language tags need to be included. So from the question that needs to be asked is, do you find a way to add language tagging to the WHOIS protocol, or do you replace WHOIS with something else? I guess I'm coming at it from the point of view that at least the IETF has answered this question for itself, and to the extent that we tend to go with those standards as the first choice, or at least the first thing to think about before we consider something else. And the IETF has proposed a replacement protocol for WHOIS, which is IRIS, of course. Now, I mean, to date it hasn't gotten any traction, and so there's all kinds of issues that go with that, which is a reason for, you know, us to maybe step back, or maybe as maybe one of our recommendations is just that language tag is important. I don't know if this group really wants to come to the conclusion that we need to revisit how to get language tags into the WHOIS protocol, or if it, you know, we need to look for an alternate replacement of it than IRIS. You know, I mean, I guess it's up to see. I'd be interested at this point in seeing what other people think about that whole process. I mean, I have my own view, but trying not to be biased in my response. Does that at least answer your question? Okay. So
it does answer a question? Then that's good. I was going to add to it, then I don't have to. Question from here, and then Francisco.
Hi, Jay again. I would say that IRIS is more than dead. It's been burnt on a funeral pyre and its ashes scattered to the four winds. If you can reanimate that, good luck to you. I probably have some other jobs you could do, world hunger, world peace among them as well. WHOIS is extremely extensible in the sense that we can do what we want with what's inside it. It has the ability for us to send it flags and do things with it. A number of registries around the world, such as JPRS and others, are doing good things with that. So I think the scope for doing things with WHOIS is actually far bigger than we might say. There are other problems with WHOIS that need fixing, but for what we want to do with language tags, I can't see that there's anything that WHOIS cannot do that we need to be able to achieve.
Okay, Francisco, and then Steve.
Thank you, Edmund. This is Francisco. To say that the next section at 11 is just about the WHOIS protocol and the issues with that.
I was wondering if you could, get back to my earlier question, on the four models, so thanks.
I'm getting there. Okay, but just one point on what was said. I think what we're trying to distinguish is the data in the WHOIS that's presented, that's passed along, versus some tag that the WHOIS client or server will use and do something special about the data. That's the second part. It's like we don't want to go there. The first part, the data elements, yes, we need that in the data. So that's Jim, you want to add again? Yeah.
I guess I was just going to ask what question it is that is in scope for this working group to answer. Jay started a discussion about sort of going down a level about, WHOIS, it's possible to make WHOIS work. And there might be some solutions there that need to be considered. What is in scope for this working group in terms of the question to be answered? I mean, is it about exploring the suggested solutions to the replacement for WHOIS, which means we need to be specific about the fact that the current WHOIS protocol standard needs to be replaced? There are some existing solutions. Is it within scope for us to be looking at those solutions, or is it a recommendation that is it a sufficient recommendation from this group to simply say the existing WHOIS needs to be replaced, and the topic for further study is a technical group that looks at those solutions?
That's a good question, Jim. I think earlier on in our discussion, I think we tried to grapple with this particular item, and I think the group sort of felt that what is within scope is to define the data elements, and you know, if there are requirements where the current whose protocol cannot handle, then we should flag it. I think rather than, you know, trying to decide Iris who is or what is that. I don't know if Steve or Julie can add to that.
I don't know that either, Julie.
And so I think what I remembered from our previous discussion is what you just said, Edmund. I think that this group was not looking at recommendations on you know with what to replace the WHOIS protocol, but simply, you know, what types of things, what types of requirements would need to exist in whatever directory service that might be, you know, to accommodate internationalized registration data. So rather than saying what that protocol should be, this group is saying, you know, that protocol, whatever it is, should have these various requirements, if that's clear.
Jay
again. I would have thought that we would be trying to provide a standardized template, using the word standardized very loosely there, for how internationalized data is represented in WHOIS, that would attempt to provide a well-known mechanism for that, the use more than just in GTLD WHOIS, but also potentially in CCTLD WHOIS, so that we're all happy to try to adopt that, and that if by doing that we find that there are some problems that simply cannot be resolved through WHOIS, then there is an additional paragraph or something that says, this, you know, this is now out of scope for us because it now means that someone now needs to look at replacing WHOIS to fix this problem.
I just want to make one comment, and then Steve and Jim. So I guess not just if it cannot be done, but also, you know, if it can be done better, we can also flag it. I guess that's one thing.
There are two comments from the Adobe Connect room. Remote participation from Dave. The WHOIS protocol has no data schema per se. That's consistent with the 1980 protocols. It is possible to define a data schema, but then you also need other protocol enhancements to signal versions, schema, etc. And the second point is, we are conflating the two issues. Issue one, we need a more formal data structure to accommodate internationalized registration data. And second, we either need to enhance WHOIS or find a protocol replacement.
Jim?
Okay, so this is Jim Galvin, and I agree with Jay Daly, and I agree with Dave Piscatello, and let me try and say it a little bit differently. I think we're all in agreement, so let me just try some words out here on some of this. I think that it's in scope for this working group to define the requirements for the data elements for WHOIS presentation that meet the needs of IDN. If we create that, which we are well on our way to doing, and a part of that is choosing amongst those four models, because those create an operational requirement for how that's accomplished, I think that we can come to the conclusion, we can observe as a finding that the existing WHOIS protocol does not meet these needs. It does not have the data representation model, nor does the protocol itself, as the standard in the ITF. That protocol does not meet the requirements. It does not provide a mechanism for meeting the requirements of this presentation that we've declared. And then, therefore, we can get to a recommendation that says, the group says that the WHOIS protocol, as defined today, needs to be replaced, either by some kind of enhancement or something wholly different. And then we can debate, you know, whether, you know, what specific mechanism we're going to propose to ICANN to think about how to, you know, push forth or put forth or progress a replacement. Does that make sense?
James?
Sorry, I'm an observer here. Just, I'd like to make a couple comments. The first comment is that, is it within scope of this working group to look at a replacement for WHOIS? Or is this working group tasked to look at the elements within the WHOIS that is suitable for internationalized domain names registration? So the distinction would the answer to that question would determine what should be the goal of this working group. Then the second question that I have is, the second comment I have is, I was looking through the four models, and I don't have an answer. Who actually use Whois? The Whois data is there not for registrar, not for registries, it's not for registrant, but there are people within the community that need to use Whois on a regular basis. So the answer to that four model is, what do they want? And I don't have an answer. Put it another way, what are trademark owners, what are the law enforcement agency that's using Whois on a regular basis, what do they want of the four models?
That is why we convene this group. But first of all, the first question, I think it's pretty clear that this is not the group to discuss, you know, what replacement, who is, you know, what is going to replace. I think we're trying to identify the data elements for IDN and internationalized registration data. And if there are certain things that require, you know, it's quite apparent that the Whois protocol is not suitable for, then we need to flag it, and then another group somewhere would take on that. I think that's a pretty clear consensus on that. On the second question, which segues into the discussion, we have about 15 minutes left. I think we want to spend a little bit of time thinking about precisely that question. You know, once we get the public comments, how do we come to a decision? You know, what the process should be, and basically how do we move forward? I think what James brought up seems to be an interesting, very interesting question. I understand that did the Whois study start? I don't even remember. Because that would provide us some information on the users and what they want from the Whois. I don't know if anyone from staff can help us with that.
Hi, it's Liz Gaster with the ICANN policy staff. There have been two compliance-initiated studies that have been completed, one on accuracy and one on proxy and privacy services. The GNSO council-related studies, there's only one that the council has agreed to proceed with, and this is the one dealing with what we're calling misuse, which has to do with, you know, public access to Whois and whether that increases the amount of harmful activities that are occurring. That study has not started yet, but we have gotten council concurrence to proceed, so we're just in the process of negotiating with a outside entity to actually do that work. There are three other studies that the council's looking at, you know, having to do with proxy privacy services and that reveal provision in the RAA, and also some information about registrants that the council has not yet decided whether to proceed on. And just for to close the loop, when the council decided to take a look at these studies back in March of 2009, they also asked staff to consider a study on non-ASCII text and impact on client-side software. This was a study that had originally been proposed by Steve Del Bianco of the business constituency, and essentially we kind of held off on suggesting that that study should be done, recognizing that it does overlap in a significant sense with the issues that you're grappling with here. And so we have not done any work on kind of scoping that study, hoping that the work you do here might provide a path forward without having to go that route. Thanks.
Steve?
This is Steve Metallitz. Let me just add a little more context to Liz's response. ICANN has done a study of what users want from Whois. It was completed in 2003. And, of course, it didn't deal with IDNs at all. I think it has a lot of interesting data in it, but it's certainly not directly on point. I think this public comment period we have now is an excellent time to try to get some users, anyway, of Whois to focus on this question of what do they expect Whois to look like in the IDN environment. So it strikes me that if we're doing a webinar for registrars and registries, we might be able to use that, although I think it might have to be adapted to other groups. For example, the commercial stakeholders group, which includes a lot of Whois users, and for law enforcement. I would suggest that you might need to present some of this information a little bit differently, but But I think this is a good opportunity over the next few months to try to get more people to focus on this question, because, frankly, I don't think very many of them are focused on it.
Thank you, Steve. This is Julie Hedlund. I think we've got some really good suggestions here. The webinar, you know, we can tailor it to the community and also to the public and simplify it to, you know, a few of the issues we really want people to focus on. So I think those are excellent approaches during the public comment period to get people to focus.
And just, Jim.
Okay. The thing that I want to, in partial response to the question about how to, you know, get, know what the user community wants, we want to come back around to the question that we have those four models, and I believe that our partial response to trying to meet the needs of the user community is that's where we are at the moment. You know, we're trying to figure out what, if there is a single model and what it is, and we have at least those four, even in the working group. And we need to focus the community on looking at those and deciding if any one of those can meet their needs, and to please let us know, and or if there's something different, as we've been saying.
Yeah, adding to that, I think James' question was pretty good. And in terms of when we present this information, you know, to the various stakeholders, we probably should structure it into asking questions, first of all, you know, does this satisfy what you need? And also, what do you need? You know, the who is for. So, well, I should have, you know, used the other way around. So, what do you use the who is information for? And does this satisfy what you would need it for? Is really, I guess, James, what James was saying. And I think that's a great input. And that would also help the stakeholders think and provide valuable information for us to make the decision, I think. But I guess beyond that, do we want to? We have about 8 minutes left. Oh, Hota.
Sorry, this is Hiro again. As to the four models, if my understanding is correct, I wonder if model 2, 3, 4 do work. For example, a Japanese string may have two or more pronunciation, and one pronunciation can be written in two or more Japanese strings. And I'm saying that a pronunciation, which may be in ASCII string, in the I don't know the model string, cannot be converted in one local string uniquely. So I don't think this situation applies. Not only to I don't think this situation applies only to Japanese. So I mean, transliteration does not work in general, I think. So maybe you discussed about that.
Could we invite you to join the working group, or also, I mean, that's the kind of input we really need when we consider these models.
Right, and actually, you know, we did deliberate a little bit on that issue. The question really is what we're asking for is it to be transliterated into ASCII, and how useful the transliterated version is, you know, is not guaranteed, and also the uniqueness, you know, whether you can transliterate and go back and forth and back, you know, that also is not what we care about. At least that's, you know, based on the discussion we had, that we don't care about that. But what I think part of the discussion was to be able to present it in an ASCII format such that current tools, whether it be law enforcement tools or, you know, other tools, could potentially make use of that data and do pattern matching or, you know, different types of things to the data. That was, at least that was part of the intent. But in terms of uniqueness of the data, we do understand, you know, there are different, not only for Japanese, for Russian, for any language to transliterate, there are usually more than one way to do it. But you know how much, you know, how useful the data is, that wasn't part of the discussion, which is useful information at this point. So Harold and then James.
If you want to support data that is stored in IDN form, internationalized form, and want to support display of that data in ASCII, you have created an absolute requirement that a language tag has to be stored along with it, that data. You cannot transliterate anything without knowing which language it's in.
James?
It's a follow-up on Hota-san. Actually, translation works if it is provided by the end registrant themselves, because they will know how to do the translation themselves. But automatic translation will not work. It doesn't work in Chinese, it doesn't work in Japanese, it doesn't work in all sort of languages. So that's one thing that to take in consideration when you evaluate the four different models. The second question that perhaps the group should also ask the user, does a translated address and name and whatever information that's available on the WHOIS in ASCII, is it actually useful? I mean, I could give you a translated address of Chinese address. You can't put it on an envelope and send a letter out. It will go nowhere. No one will understand what the address means, because there is a proper translation of the address, but the postman does not use a translation of that name. So how useful are translated data in the first place? So I think that's the end of the question that perhaps the group should ask. Why do we do translation? Just for the purpose of processing data? Then the third question is this. If it's meant for processing data, that to use existing tools that they can scrape data that doesn't handle IDNs, and therefore they need an ASCII version of those data elements, then the question is, we are dealing with IDNs domain names. Those two will not work in any case. So the tools have to be upgraded. So,
yeah, the points are very well taken, and you know, we put out these modules so that we can have the discussion. In the working group, we definitely went through that. You know, whether an address is useful and can be used. Whether you put in an address, does it have to pass the test of sending postal? Is that a requirement? I think we sort of stayed away from that. It's really just for data processing. And to Harold's point, I know I have you, Jay. Sorry. To Harold's point, I think that's precisely the thing. You know, whether it's not, we're asking for a magic transliteration after the fact. That's why the registrar, who has the relationship with the registrant within the environment that they obtain the registration, would produce that transliteration conceptually. But maybe that whole model is gone. Is on this point, I have Jay, but do you have a quick comment and then Jay? Or
quick comment. Transliteration is... There are tons of standards for transliteration. There are scopes in which they are used on a regular basis, and they're very useful in those limited scopes. For trying to use it for other purposes, they give garbage. But the standards exist, they are useful. If you're not talking about automatic transliteration, you're talking about double registration. Double registration is a fine technique. You just need to be precise.
First, Jay again. First of all, I apologize. I was active in the working group about this at the beginning, but have been too busy to have much involvement since. I was one of the movers for these type of models, because I wanted to avoid us being in a position where we attempted to have de facto a single language and a single script for all GTLDs. I don't think that reflects the world, and I don't think it ever will reflect the world. I also felt that the registrant and their relationship with the registrar was the crucial relationship for this. By definition, they need to generally be able to communicate in some way in order just to handle basic functionality such as billing and things there. I'd also point out that there's a question here of the context of a must-be-present script. when we're looking at, for example, an IDN CCTLD, I think that the notion of a must-be-present script is pretty straightforward, because we have one effectively given to us by the IDN CCTLD there. When we're looking at a GTLD, this becomes, well, okay, maybe not great, right?
Poland allows registration in almost any script in the world.
No, I said an IDN CCTLD specifically, okay? The question comes when we're looking at GTLDs, or we're looking at, you know, .pl, for example, where that's when we begin to question whether these are global or are they US ASCII in that type of way. Is .com a global, really truly global? In that case, what is wrong with somebody who only speaks one language and only uses one script doing everything in that? Why should they be required to do anything other than to speak in their language and their script to be able to use it? And so that is the heart of what this is trying to tackle, I think, and I think that's the real question for people to answer.
Exactly. So I think we're out of time. I actually encourage everyone to, I think, join the mailing list. If you want to, please connect with Julie. And we'll close this session. Thank you so much for everyone's participation.
Thank you, everyone. This meeting is adjourned. Steve, can you go ahead and end the recording on the Adobe Connect room?